Well, are you one of our regular students for Self-Improvement Wednesday? Each week you get to learn something new. Your lesson this week, the origins and evolution of Australian English. Your teacher is Associate Professor Felicity Cox from the Department of Linguistics at Macquarie University. Good afternoon.
Hi, Richard.
This beautiful accent of ours, Felicity. It's beautiful, isn't
it? It's fabulous, isn't it? I love it so much.
Where does it come from? How did it develop?
It's a really fascinating story. So just to give you a little bit of perspective, when the first fleet arrived...
Just come a little bit closer to your microphone for me.
Thank you. Sorry. When the first fleet arrived, it arrived with approximately 41 or 40 or so children. And those children, when they started speaking English in Australia, in this new colony, they started learning English from each other and mixing all of the different varieties that they heard around them, and they developed a new variety. And this new variety very, very quickly became Australian English.
And recognisably so?
Absolutely recognisably. So we have written sources from the early part of the 19th century describing this variety as a pure form. The variety of the kids was quite pure, and what they meant by pure was that it was very homogeneous, so there was not a lot of variation compared to in Britain, for example, where there are lots and lots and lots of different varieties of the accent.
So they took the Irish and the Cockney and the Scottish and all of that, and it became one quite quickly.
Absolutely. That's precisely what we believe has happened. Of course, we don't have any audio records from the day. But, yes, it seems to be the case.
And what did people think about our beautiful Australian accent? Were they proud of it?
They were very proud of it. Okay, yeah. In fact, apparently they even used their native-born characteristics and their Australian accent to curry favour with the governor. So they would say things like, we were born here, listen to our voice, you know, please give us land. They were very proud of it. And commentators were proud of it as well. It wasn't until later, in the later part of the 19th century, that people started to complain about it.
Okay, so what, in the 1880s, 1890s?
Yes, 1880s, 1890s, they developed a new variety in England that's called received pronunciation. And new migrants coming from England brought that here and decided that the Australian English they heard around them was not quite up to par.
Okay, which is when you get, listen in, the posh Australian accent.
The plane flew down low over the runway, then increased speed and circled the aerodrome a second time.
Yeah, so really we then split into three, don't we? There's three sorts of Australian English.
That's right. There's a continuum of variation that can be described as a continuum from the cultivated type, which is the British type, to the very local broad type. And in the middle, there's kind of a general. So that variety that you just heard, that was a 15-year-old girl recorded in the 1960s. Now, if you listen to her today, she actually sounds a bit older because she's using that cultivated form that we don't really hear so much these days.
So we go in the space of these 200 years from being proud of the accent to it splitting into three, of which one is really a copied British accent of RP, to the last, I suppose, 30 or 40 years, again, we've got rid of received pronunciation. We've got rid of that posh English.
Yes, that's right. It became, around about the 60s and 70s, it became less socially advantageous to have that kind of an accent. I mean, of course, the ABC stopped using those accents in the 50s, and now we have a whole range of different varieties, of course, that we're exposed to in broadcasting. Mm.
Okay, but there are still some differences in the way we all speak, and some of them are related to exactly what generation we're part of, whether we're younger Australians or older Australians. Listen in as Julia Gillard talks about Mr. Abbott, or as some people heard it, Mr. Rabbit.
If you vote for Mr. Rabbit as Prime Minister, guess what? You end up with Mr. Rabbit as Prime Minister.
Now, some people teased her, John Fain, for instance, in Melbourne, for talking about Mr. Rabbit as if she was doing it on purpose.
Absolutely. I found that extraordinary when I heard it. She was doing something that's very, very common in Australian English. It's just something that we automatically do. If you'd like me to explain it, what happens is that Mr. is a word that ends in a vowel sound in Australia, so Mr. rather than Mr. So when you say a vowel sound...
Mr. as if it was spelled with an A at the end.
Exactly. Yeah. So if you have Mr. and then put that with another word that starts in it with a vowel, as in Abbott, you've got two vowels together, and that's really not a good thing to have in language. So people put in consonants in between, and one of the consonants that can go in there is an R. So she was just saying Mr. Abbott, which is what most people over the age of about 40 would do in Australia when they're confronted with that kind of construction. And that was a natural connected speech process.
Now, okay, how do younger Australians solve the same problem, the problem being if we pronounce Mr. as if it's ended with an A and Mr. Abbott begins with an A, you've got two A's together. How would a younger Australian solve that problem?
So younger Australians do something quite different. They put in another consonant, but it's a different consonant. It's a glottal stop. So what they do is say Mr. Abbott as opposed to Mr. Abbott. So they're still doing the same kind of thing, inserting a consonant, but just a different type.
Mm-hmm. Different response to this problem of consonants coming together. Listen into this.
Steve Wright was drowned in Calcutta Harbour. Joe Burns died in East India where I was with fever.
Now, what's going on there?
Isn't he fantastic? Now, this is a gentleman who was born in 1880, so that's a fantastic snapshot of time, of the kind of accent that was around at the time of Federation. Now, he says Calcuttaraba. Isn't that fabulous?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So he's using the same kind of process. He's got Calcutta, which ends in a vowel, and then his version of harbour, which is arba, starts in a vowel, and he's putting an ur in there again. So he's saying Calcuttaraba.
Mm. Now, we know some of these differences are related to age and they've changed quite recently, partly because we've got some sound files from the 1960s where we can actually study it straight on.
Absolutely. We've got lots of sound files. In fact, we've got sound files dating back to 1917. So we've got lots of data. Sound files from the 1960s were collected from children in the last year of school, 7,000 children from around Australia were collected. So we have this wonderful archive of historical data that we can use today. We do acoustic analysis to compare those data with data from today. It's just an amazing resource.
Okay, so how has our accent changed between 1960 and now?
Huge number of changes. So you just heard one of the examples there where we don't have the cultivated type anymore so much. We have more variation in the community. So, of course, we were talking about Syrian refugees. We have lots of variation, a huge amount of variation, and that can be the catalyst for change as well. So we have another example is the example of the vowel a when it occurs in a word like hand, sometimes sounds like hand now. So that's a newish change that's occurring.
And where do you think that comes from?
That's a really tricky one. We're still trying to get to the bottom of that. It's some new research that we're doing at the moment. We don't know. We still don't know who exactly does that, but we're finding it all along the east coast of Australia.
And do you think these other forms of Australian English, I suppose broadly ethnic English, Aboriginal English, do you think they're affecting the way that non-Indigenous people, non-ethnic people are speaking Australian English?
Absolutely. So now we really have these new varieties, what we're calling the ethnocultural varieties, just in the absence of a better expression. And so we're really increasing the amount of variability in Australian English. So it should make it clear that Australian English is a term that we use to describe the speech of people who were born here or raised in Australia. So there are a wide range of ethnic, religious, cultural different people using Australian English in a whole range of different varieties.
It's still not as related to class as it is elsewhere, which I think is a wonderful thing. Yeah. In a way, when James Packer speaks, you don't know that he's the third richest bloke in the country.
Exactly. And that's new. That's relatively new. So in the past, accent was much more related to class than it is today.
You can tell whether someone's from the bush, though, don't you think?
Oh, I don't know. I think the jury's still out on that a little bit, Richard.
Don't they speak? I thought they spoke more slowly and kept their mouths closed in order not to suck in the flies. That's the stereotype, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. It's, of course, not true. There may be some differences in the country, but maybe some of those in the rural areas, mm-hmm. but maybe some of that difference is to do with the reduced variation in the communities, reduced linguistic variation in the communities. That's a possibility.
Okay. And the other remarkable thing, I suppose I'm partly thinking about Great Britain here, is maybe the Adelaide accent is a little bit different, but essentially you can't tell where someone comes from, can you?
You can't
tell the difference between Melbourne and Brisbane and Sydney, for instance.
Not really. There are some markers, but they're not necessarily going to tell you definitely where a person's from. That's absolutely so interesting because it means that the accent developed very, very early in the colony and similarly in all of those different centres and has developed in a similar way throughout.
Okay, in a funny sort of way, it confirms what you said right at the beginning, that the accent develops here in Sydney within 10 years or whatever of arrival, and then when those people go from Sydney to Melbourne, then they take that pre-existing accent with them.
That's exactly right. There are other theories that the same accent developed independently in all of the different places because the similar mix of people came to those places. So that's another possibility.
Which is why
the
Adelaide people sound different, because they're not convicts.
Well, you know, Richard, they say that the Adelaideans love to say that. But in fact, it's probable that Adelaide was settled a little bit later by people who were coming from Britain whose language and accent had developed already a little bit more. So they were using a more progressive form of English.
Mm. But you don't think we're not going to separate out in over time? We're still going to all sound like Australians, with a similar accent?
I believe that's true. I think there'll still be variation, particularly in the non-mainstream types. So, for example, those ethnocultural varieties. But, yeah, generally speaking, I think we'll all sound pretty similar.
Well, what a lovely analysis of our beautiful, beautiful accent. Felicity Cox, thank you very much.
Thank you.
There's Associate Professor Felicity Cox from the Department of Linguistics at Macquarie University with your lesson for this week, The Origins and Evolution of Australian English. You can, of course, listen again online at abc.net.au/Sydney. There you can subscribe free to the Self-Improvement Wednesday podcast. Get it into your phone or whatever every week for free. Next week, Liz Ann McGregor, director at the Museum of Contemporary Art. Her topic, the work and life of Ian Hamilton Finlay, a Scottish poet, writer, artist and gardener. That's Self-Improvement Wednesday next week.